Right, thank you, Vanessa, for that lovely introduction. And you've brought me right back to that day in 2015 when we spray painted together on a hillside. And that reminds me that nearly everything I do in my art practice involves others. And I've learned to love the collaborative side of my work where I get to know the person that's helping me. And they become a part of the creative process. Anyway, so thanks very much for the opportunity to present this workshop to everybody. And it's very strongly linked to my artworks, but more of that in a little while. I just want to start by first of all, repeating my thanks for inviting me to this conference. And as we were saying an hour ago, there's been so many great things happening at this conference, not least of which is just the most amazing level of accessibility. And as I said, and fighting back the tears, as I said it earlier, that I've never experienced an online event like this that's been this accessible. It's just quite incredible. The interpretation has been marvelous, and the technical support has been second to none. So thank you again. And the takeaways have been very interesting for me anyway. I shall forever have the image that painted by Danielle of the river. I think it was a child, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a blind child who drew or painted a river as a circle with pebbles in the middle. And I think it was a girl. She was swimming in the river, and as a visually impaired person, she thought of the river as a circle around her body. Presumably, that's what the circle's about. I find that staggering. And the pebbles under her feet, that's the way she perceived that river, and she turned it into a work of art. And that is just pure and simple blind aesthetics at work there. So that was my favorite moment of the whole 4 days. My next favorite was Vanessa's allusion just about an hour ago to pebbles. She was talking about the takeaways and asking people to reflect on their takeaways. Well, when she said it might be a big thing, or it might just be a very small pebble, and that made me think of on pebbles. And when you throw a pebble into a pond, there are ripples that come away from that splash, and those ripples go far and wide. So even if it's just a tiny thing that you've picked up, it might have profound consequences for the future and your future thinking, your future work. Those are the ripples that come from pebbles. I'm going to be referring to notes as I talk. So excuse me if there are one or two sort of hesitations as I'm listening to my notes, and then I'll be speaking following the listening. So the other takeaway that I think I'll go away with is this notion of crypt time. I've come across crypt theory in my studies, which is fascinating and very important in my studies. Crypt time is a new one on me, and I really enjoy this idea that disability and blindness comes with its own sort of time frame. And I'm particularly interested in this as an older student. I've come back to studying, having had my own art practice for many years. I decided a few years ago to see if I could do a PhD, and luckily managed to get into the Royal College of Art, and I'm doing a part-time PhD. So it's taking quite a few years. I'm in my fourth year, and I'm probably one of the oldest students there. I'm in my mid-60s, and but really enjoying it and finding it so stimulating. And the Royal College of Art is a postgraduate university. They have no undergraduates there. So nearly everyone is sort of slightly older, but I think I'm in the very much the upper quartile of the student body in terms of age. So the crypt time, the idea of crypt time resonates with my studying as well, and my own journey through both life and art and studies. I have a wealth of life and memories behind me, as all mid-60-year-olds do, and my journey through blindness has been an interesting one as well. My eye condition is a fairly common eye disease known as retinitis pigmentosa. I'm sure there are other people at this conference with that condition, which is generally speaking a progressive degenerative condition of the retina. So your eyesight deteriorates over many years usually, and in my case I was a sort of classic case where I started off life with pretty much full healthy eyesight and then gradually lost it along with my hair as my as time progressed. And I think I've got more hair now than I have eyesight, because my eyesight went completely in my mid-30s. But as I'm sure many of you here also know, with degenerative progressive eye conditions, in the late stages of partial sight, it's very interesting and curious, because you're not quite sure whether what you're perceiving is actual optical perception or imagined images. So the last few years of my sort of seeing phase in my 30s was a very odd time when I wasn't, as I say, I wasn't sure whether I was seeing or imagining. And it's that, I find that fascinating now as a totally blind person. And I use those sort of ideas of ambiguity between seeing and imagining, optical seeing and inner seeing. I use those ideas in my art now. I really enjoy that ambiguity. And that leads me on to the final big takeaway I shall leave this conference with, and that's this very thing, the ambiguity between subject and object. That was mentioned a number of times during the conference. The subjective and the objective become a continuity rather than a binary. Very much, I think, a phenomenology idea in the philosophy of people like Merleau-Ponty. But again, more of that later. I'll just now go on to a brief description of myself, if I may. So I'm a tall, white male, and I'm, as I said, in my mid-60s, and I've got grey hair that's balding, and a grey beard. I think I've got more beard than I have hair these days, actually probably more white than grey, I'm told. So, and I'm dressed quite conventionally, I think, in greys and blues, and I'm wearing sort of jeans and a jumper, and I'm wearing some sort of fairly heavy duty boots, which I enjoy wearing because they make me feel as if I'm constantly at work, even when I'm not working. So I shall organise what I'm going to say, and I've already spent some time talking, into three main chunks. The first part of the hour, it may not take a full hour, but the first bit, I'll read out a little bit of writing just as an introduction to the way I'm thinking and what the workshop's all about. Then I'll show you one or two pieces of my art, just a couple, which are at the basis of the workshop, the basis of the thinking of the workshop, and then I'll present the workshop itself, which will probably last about half an hour, 40 minutes maybe, depends how it goes. So I hope that's okay, folks. So I'll just start reading again. Bear with me if it's a little bit faltering, but I'll do my best. excuse me, I'll just take a swig of water. So this interactive workshop arose from a series of my PhD related artworks entitled Transient Objects. These pieces are handheld 3D printed objects that are representations of captured moments of touch or touching. And they are thought of as momentary encounters in a space-time synthesis. With blindness, there is a heightened awareness that when the fingertips or the skin momentarily alights on the surface of an object, there is a simultaneous moment of recognition or questioning as to what the object is or whether it is safe or wholesome to touch. In these pieces, these fleeting moments are represented by blocked out areas of solid plastic, either Pringle-shaped ovals for the fingertips or large areas for the palm of the hand. And I'll show you some of these in a minute, but I'll continue. The rest of the object, which is untouched, is implied by a network of supporting thin strands of plastic. This results in the ordinary object portrayed having a very extraordinary visual presence. It is not clear whether the touch points represented by solid areas of curved plastic are of the object being touched or of the skin doing the touching. Are they of neither or of both? I think of them as undecidable quantum moments of spatio-temporality or synchronicity. So this is, I'm just going off script a bit here, but this is what I find so fascinating about making a piece of art about that moment of touch, that instant of connection with an object, and trying to sort of extract that and put it into a piece of art, which is what I've done, because this is where I circle back to the idea of the subject and the object being a blurred sort of continuity. The point of touch, I'm not sure whether that the experience of the touch is of the object or of me. And I think they are of both at the same time, if you follow. With blindness, this phenomenon and the uncertainty that accompanies it is amplified because blind people cannot perceive their touching moments with a precautionary glance. Blind people cannot look before they leap. This can, of course, result in blind people literally and metaphorically getting their fingers burned, but it also means that they have an exciting and hugely privileged insight into the reality and mystery of the moment of touch. With blindness, these moments of touch and the powerful instant and instantaneous messages they convey are ubiquitous and, as such, are prominent examples of the blindness aesthetics that is the subject of my PhD research. So I'll now show you a couple of the pieces that I'm talking about. These are 3D prints, and I'll describe them also to those of you who can't see. So the first one I'm going to show you is called Transient Object Caught in a Multidimensional Moment of Impossible Pringles. That's the title, rather a long-winded title. So this is, I'm going to hold it up to the camera, and for those of you who can see, you may be able to recognize it. I'm going to turn it around slowly, and I'll describe it for everyone else. It's a very irregular shape with a curved outcrop on one side. It's actually a coffee mug, a very ordinary coffee mug, but it looks and feels very extraordinary, because what I've done in collaboration with the technicians in the 3D print lab at college, we isolated the points of touch where the fingers are light on the mug. So with my right hand, what we did is we put ink on my fingertips, and then I placed my fingers, my four fingers and my opposing thumb, on one side of the mug. And so they left five fingerprints, oval-shaped fingerprints, on the surface of the mug. My left hand is holding the handle of the mug. And again, we put ink on my fingers so that they left splodges of ink on the handle of the mug. We then scanned the mug with all the ink marks on them. And then we digitally subtracted the mug from the whole thing. So we were just left with the finger points floating in midair. And they were a sort of constellation. We were left with a constellation of fingerprints that, in and of themselves, visually, apparently, did imply the shape of a mug, because of the positioning of those points, they implied the shape. And then we asked the 3D printer to print those fingerprints, those points, except we needed to construct a framework of supporting structures to hold the finger points in midair. And that's what this piece is. It's the fingerprints floating and supported by this framework of lines of plastic. So visually, it's quite it's sort of vaguely recognizable as a mug. And I think the more you look at it, the more it becomes that mug. Tactilely, it's very very reminiscent of a mug. If you put your fingers on the spots, the ovals of touch, then it instantly reminds you of a mug, because your fingers are holding. Someone spotlighted my video. It's very redolent, reminiscent of holding a mug, because that's what your fingers are in the position of doing. I hope that makes sense. I'll just show you one other piece, which is the same idea but a different object.
This is actually a piece of fruit, a pear, and exactly the same thing was done. We got hold of a, I'm holding it in front of the camera now, and then turning it for those who you can see, and I'll describe it for those who can't in a minute. We got a just an ordinary conference pear. Quite a small one actually, and then again I put ink on my fingers, and I placed my fingers around. I just held the pear in one hand, so that the palm of the hand was holding one side of the pear, and my fingers are lighted on the top of the pear. So there, and that left these ink marks around the pear. So you've got again four fingerprints at the top of the pear, and a thumbprint on the opposing thumb, and the shape of my palm on the lower fat end of the pear. We then scanned the inked pear. We subtracted the pear from the image, so we were just left with the finger points, and we 3D printed the result. Again, we had to construct a structure of lines to support the finger points that were floating, otherwise they'd fall out of thin air. We're left again with a very, for those of you who can't see, it's a very extraordinary shape, really. It's vaguely pear-shaped. For those of you who can see, this is where it would be wonderful to be in your actual presence, where I could hand this around for you to feel, for the people who can't see, but I'll do my best to describe it. It's vaguely pear-shaped. It's got a sort of fatter part to it, which is the bowl of the pear, and then at the top it sort of thins out a little bit. But there's very little substance to this shape. It's mainly thin air. I particularly like this because if you find those finger points and hold it with one hand, it really does feel as if you've got a pear in your hand, you know, an entire pear, and you want to sort of take a bite out of it almost, you know, it's so reminiscent of a real pear. So again, it's just trying to capture that moment of touch when it screams out pear to you. If your hands are in that position, you can feel the main points of the pear in your hand. I always compare it, the experience of this sort of moment of touch, I compare to the audible experience of hearing a very familiar tune, a musical phrase. You know, you only need to hear a tiny fragment of a very familiar tune for you to recognise it. It's the same with touch, I think. You only need to feel a tiny bit of a familiar shape and you instantly recognise it. So those are the bits of art I wanted to show you. Transient objects, they're called, as I say, because they are a moment in time, really. They're more about temporality than spatiality. So as I was thinking about these pieces, it dawned on me that you can expand this idea beyond just the hand and small objects. You can extend it to the whole body. And this is where our workshop really begins, because if you think about your body and really become aware of it, you begin to realize that those experiences I was just showing you with mugs and pears are happening all over your body all of the time. Your skin is in contact, quite a lot of your skin is in contact with objects that aren't of you, And most of the time, we're not really aware of it or not conscious of it in a very sort of experiential way. It just happens as a sort of passing momentary thing in life as we go through our day-to-day tasks. But I want you to now stop and think about this with me. And again, in the interest of accessibility, I'm very aware that not everyone in this room will have necessarily the same sensitivity in their body as we might not all have the same sensitivity. So I want you to think about this as best you can. I'm thinking in particular of people with this neurological or sensorial skin problems or conditions that make their sensitivity to touch not so good or depleted in some way. So apologies to them, and I hope you can get as much as possible from what I'm about to describe and encourage people to do. So I want you to think about how you're sitting right now. And I'm assuming you are sitting, but it's fine if you're not. Whatever your body position, I just want you to relax into that body position and start thinking about the mindful body, as I call it. And I want you to start thinking about how your different parts of your body are interacting with the world around it, which will include things like the floor under your feet, the seat under your backside, and the clothing that you're wearing. So I'm going to take you step by step, if we've got time, through your body, and just recognizing as we go those moments, those momentary experiences, those transient moments, because you'll it's quite an interesting process which sort of maps your body. I call it the sort of auto-haptic body map, where you get a sort of an insight into your own body, which is quite different to how you normally think of your body, and it's certainly nothing to do with the way it looks. It's all about the way it feels or the way it doesn't feel. So we'll start with the feet. So if you're wearing shoes, I want you to think about those shoes, and I want you to think about where your feet are and how they're positioned. And I can only go on my own situation here because A, I can't see your feet, and everyone's feet will be different and differently positioned. I happen to have my left foot flat on the floor, my right foot is scrunched up under my seat, so that only the toe of my right foot is in contact with the floor. So I want you to just think about your feet and their position right now. And I'm going to leave these little silences occasionally for you to just dwell on what I'm saying. So I'm feeling my shoes quite clearly, because they're quite heavy shoes that I'm wearing, but I'm also aware of the floor under the sole of my left foot, which has got a lot of surface contact with the floor because it's flat. And I've got quite shiny tiles on the floor I'm sitting in, or the room I'm sitting in. So it's quite, I'm just sort of wiggle my foot a little bit and I can sort of feel the smoothness of the floor. I'm just going to wiggle my toes a little bit just to feel the inside of my shoe. My right foot, I'm aware that my toes are a little bit scrunched up because I've got my foot twisted in a rather uncomfortable position. And my third and fourth toe I'm aware of because they're taking quite a lot of pressure of my foot because of the twist I've put it into. So So I hope you've become quite aware of your feet now, and maybe the socks you're wearing, if you're wearing socks, and the shoes, and the floor under, so under your feet. So if you were to do a 3D print of the touch points, that would be a very complicated 3D print. Moving up from the feet will perhaps bypass the ankles, but you might have tight socks or shoes on that make your ankles, make you aware of your ankles. I don't know. I haven't, so I can't really feel my ankles at all. But what I can feel is my lower leg, my calf and my shins are, I'm quite aware of them because my jeans are quite tight around my lower leg. I've got this sort of stretchy denim fabric which tends to cling to the to my leg, so I'm aware of my lower leg a little bit, not hugely. So my 3D print of my lower leg would be not so dramatic. But then the next bit does get quite dramatic, is the knees. My knees are, like yours probably, bent at least 90 degrees. My left knee is pretty much 90 degrees. My right knee is at a much tighter angle because my foot is under my seat. So the fabric of my jeans is stretched dramatically across my right knee and pulling quite hard on my knee. I'm very aware of that right knee. The left knee, not quite so prominent in my tactile world, but it is relatively prominent. So that's quite interesting. I can feel my jeans scrunching behind my right knee because I'm squeezing the fabric quite dramatically on my right knee. So very interesting series of tactile experiences around my knees. Pressure points, that's the other thing. The pressure points around my knees are quite high. Quite a lot of pressure there. Moving up the upper leg, the thighs, that big expanse of thighs that perhaps most of us have got, not everybody. I'm not so aware of that. I guess my jeans are perhaps loose around my thighs. I'm not so aware of them. I'm thinking as I'm talking, no, they're not saying much to me. Yes, as I work up towards my backside, I can feel the ledge of the chair that I'm sitting on. It's not very well upholstered, and I can feel the kind of wooden frame under my upper thighs quite prominently, more on the right-hand side, because my leg's sort of lower and pushing into that edge of the chair a bit, so I can feel the edge of the chair pressing against my underside of my right thigh. And then the bit we're all dreading, the groin and the backside. The backside is perhaps, for me anyway, the most prominent tactile part of my body, and I guess probably everyone else's. It depends on the way you're sitting, but the weight of probably over 50% of the weight of my body is going through my down my spine and through my backside and connecting with the seat of my the seat of the chair, and the upholstery of the chair is sort of sagging under the weight of a good deal of my body. So again, going back to a 3D print, I would be spending a lot of time on my backside. A lot of plastic would go into that printed area because it's very prominent. I'm very conscious of it. And then the whole sort of groin area, because of its sensitivity, you're quite aware of that, and the way the clothing around your groin is usually scrunched up and you're usually quite aware of it. I mean, other aspects of that area, like your bowel and your bladder, you know, if they're full, then yeah, you'll be aware of it. But maybe if they're not full, you won't be quite so aware of it. That's another interesting area about an interesting part of your sort of tactile awareness, the sort of internal objects and how they impact on you. But we'll concentrate on the outside. So working further up the body, working further up into the sort of midriff and the spine and the chest. Well, interestingly, I'm slightly aware of my midriff because I've got a little bit of a middle-aged thing, bulge going on there, and I can feel my belt, if I think about it, my waistband around my gut a little bit, embarrassingly. And but I can't really feel my back at all, even though they say a lot of your weight is transmitted through your spine. It must be, I guess. But I can't really feel that at all. That wouldn't really feature in my 3D map of my body, interestingly. And then up on into the chest and the shoulders, well, again, shoulders are quite prominent. A lot of clothing is sort of hanging on my shoulders. I'm quite aware of the fabric of my shirt sort of sagging onto my shoulders or resting on my shoulders. And my upper arms, I'm quite aware of. I've got my sleeves rolled up so I can feel those sort of gripping my lower part of my upper arm. Working down the arm. So my hands, well, you can probably, if you can see, you'll be able to see, my left hand is holding my face, my chin. I'm holding my chin and stroking my beard, which is something I do a lot. So I'm very aware of my left hand and my chin. Again, the sensation is really strange because I'm not sure what I'm feeling, whether I'm feeling my hair or whether my hair is feeling my hand. There's a sort of ambiguity there. This subject-object continuity thing is going on very strongly there. And my right hand is resting on my laptop because my fingers are poised, ready to press control buttons should I need to. So I've got two fingers, one on each key, one on each of two keys, and my thumb is resting on the sort of blank area of my laptop. And the palm of my hand, or the rest of the palm of my hand, the heel of my hand, as it were, is resting on the table just in front of the laptop. So there'll be an interesting 3D print thing going on there with my hands quite a lot. Obviously, your hands are a very important part of your tactile toolkit. Now I'm just going to whiz up to the most interesting part of the whole body, I think, and that's the head. A lot of us are probably wearing earphones. I am. So I'm aware of the headphones squeezing onto my skull, either side, just in front of my ears. I keep my earpieces just in front of my ears, not on them, so I can hear the ambient sound as well as what's coming in through my headphones. So I'm aware of the band of my headphones going across the top of my head, nestling into my bald patch on the top. And as I say, the earpiece is pressing, they're slightly spring-loaded, they're pressing against my cheeks just in front of my ears. If you're not wearing headphones, you might be wearing spectacles, possibly. You might be aware of the spectacles resting on your nose and behind your ears. A lot of people, when they were describing themselves during the conference, said they were wearing spectacles, quite heavy-duty ones, I believe. So you probably can feel them if you think about it. So again, a 3D print of your head that just acknowledged touch points would capture those points of contact between the spectacles and the nose and the ears. Same with the headphones. If you're not wearing headphones or spectacles, then you may not be able to feel your head at all, which I find it very interesting that traditionally the most sort of important part of your body for consciousness and awareness, namely your head, is potentially the least prominent when it comes to this mapping of the tactile experience of your body when it's at rest like this. So a 3D print map of your body, this sort of mindful version of the body, has got some very interesting absences and some, I think, quite interesting presences. And this is where, you know, I think the idea of a blind aesthetic version of the body based on tactility rather than on the optical is quite an interesting exercise in altered perception. So I think we're getting to the point really where that's as far as I want to go, really. I mean, I'd be very interested if anyone's got any comments or thoughts or, you know, things I've omitted or things that they're experiencing or they have experienced during this rather bizarre journey through their body that they'd like to talk about.
David, it's Vanessa here, and I'll begin. I'll begin first with thanks, David, and I will, we do have some time. We have 15 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
So we will invite reflections, and I will be happy to moderate that and call on people. If it's okay, as people are perhaps still enjoying this moment of reflection,
yeah,
and experiencing the body, I'll start to just natter away a bit so people can collect their thoughts. But David, I know that we pass now a metaphor between us back and forth, but I will feel the ripple effects of this time together and of what you've shared. You've made me think, David, about points of contact, both very literally, which I am grateful for, as well as, you know, in this particular moment of exchange more metaphorically. And I feel that mapping has been something we've returned to over these days. And I feel like you've given us a kind of sensory cartography of our own bodies. I'm deeply intrigued, David, by 3D printing, which I have to tell you, I mean, I'm familiar with your 3D printing work from a visit we had in Montreal. But I'm always struck, David, because it seems like it's not an especially tactile process, but of course you're reminding me that it is, in fact. David, before I say more, could I ask you to just comment a little more on that kind of machine-mediated process, which some people, you know, some people might expect an artist who is blind to choose a medium like clay. Do you know what I mean? Have that experience. And of course, I will tell you, David, I love the feeling of 3D printed objects. There's a kind of a hollowness and a surface structure and their weight always surprises me. David, would you mind commenting on that?
Sure, yeah. It's a very good question. Thank you, Vanessa. It's it does seem like a counterintuitive thing to work in that medium because it's very technical and very the interventions by the machine are huge, you know, so you only get to, particularly as a blind person, one doesn't get to sort of touch anything really until the process is, well, at the beginning of the process and at the end. The actual creation of the form, I had no parted at all. That was taken out of my hands completely. I was consulted along the way because there are many points at which decisions have to be made, but I was consulted about those. But in terms of tactility, no, it was the end result that I was involved in. So it really grew out of a very sort of visually impaired experience I had to do with access to museums and art galleries. I was working in an art gallery and they wanted to do a workshop for visually impaired visitors, where visually impaired visitors were involved or invited to do a life class where they would paint or draw or make a new model. And we came across the problem, well, how do they access the new model without touching the new model? We thought about 3D printing the new model. So the model agreed to be scanned and printed. So the blind or visually impaired visitors could hold a 3D printed model of the 3D print of the nude model, rather than touch the actual person, and then they made their art from the 3D print. So it was working with 3D print in that way that made me realise the benefits of 3D printing for visually impaired people, and I started to make work of my own using 3D print technology, but always again with collaborative and technical assistance. And that, as I said at the beginning, I've grown to love the process of working with people, often technical assistance, but not always, just collaborators, and working together with people, making my assistants and the machinery that I use, like the 3D printers, very much a part of the collaborative and creative process. The decision making is shared, I suppose out of necessity, I've grown to sort of enjoy the benefits and the richness of a shared idea rather than an isolated idea. It raises all sorts of questions about ownership and proprietorship of the art, but that doesn't bother me too much. So that's how 3D print came into my world. And then I've reversed the idea as well. I did a piece quite recently called A Pair of Pear-Shaped Pears, where I created, again from this same conference pair, we blew up the using 3D print technology, we enlarged the scale of the pear to about 6 foot high, and we cut out from expanded polystyrene two conference pears, but they were 6 feet tall and 3 feet across, and constructed some huge pears using the same technology, and that took them out of the realm of handheld objects, but they were still very familiar objects.
David, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to say, David, I'm always intrigued by your work with scale. And from the very small and handheld, the palm-sized piece, to large sculptural pieces, David. I will make an invitation now to our audience to raise a hand or otherwise indicate a contribution. I see Marion Chautin. So, Marion, please go ahead.
Merci, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa. But I don't want to take the place of the audience. So as soon as I see any other hands raised, I will stop. David, I really wanted to say thank you to you. A really huge thanks, because I've practiced meditation, and in a strange way, I never made the link between mindfulness and blindness. and you for showing me this thing that's absolutely obvious. And so I'm very admirative of your work that I've discovered. You create representations that are not just tactile, in that we can touch them, but they're also representations of the tactile representation itself. And I find that to be absolutely wonderful. And I would like to ask if it would be possible to make artistic creations based on the Marion Inks idea and her sensory approach to perception, to which means integrating the collective aspect of mixing up perceptions of several people, and also including what she calls the peripheral signs rather than the central signs. At least, but in any case, I'd really like to say thank you. I really liked what you did, and I now feel completely relaxed.
I'm happy about you feeling relaxed. And yeah, I was trying to make it as meditative and relaxing as possible. And yeah, thanks for those thoughts on representing the peripheral. I think that's what you were saying. The translation was a little bit patchy. The sound quality was going a little bit, but trying to capture the sort of gradations of tactile experience is interesting. The pieces that I showed you were very much on-off. You know, you were either touching it or you weren't touching it. So it was very binary in that respect. I think you were saying it would be interesting to try and capture elements that aren't so clearly central to the experience. A little bit like perhaps when I was trying to describe how my legs, I could feel them a bit, not very clearly, you know, the bits of my leg that weren't so tightly wrapped in my jeans, you know. So I think that's what you're referring to. And that is an interesting...
Oui, tout à fait exactement cela.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Also, I was also thinking, as Marion Inc was saying, about the fact that we always perceive things several people together. We shared your perception in this workshop, and I was wondering whether this dimension... But often we see things collectively, collaboratively, and whether or not we could bring that out in a work of art.
What an interesting idea.
That's just an idea.
Yeah, what an interesting idea. Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, yeah, I mean, this workshop now, presumably everyone's had their own version of this experience, you know, to a greater lesser extent, you know, some people might have felt it more deeply than others. And so to capture the gradations there, the depth of experience, that's a really interesting idea to try and collectivize that.
I agree, David. It's Vanessa again. It is indeed a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
And had we more time, David, I would like to speak more with you about human voice, not just audio description and language, but the power of the human voice. Because I think part of the reason we may feel relaxed and also energized and perhaps very clear of thought right now is we've had your voice, you know, with us for this time. And that brings us also to time, but we are out of time. And so, David, a warm, heartfelt thanks for all of us. I know I personally look forward to our next point of contact, and you've given me much to think about in the meantime. I will just turn now in our 2 minutes we have left to Marion and Hannah. And if you would like to say a goodbye. And David, we thank you again.
My pleasure. And thank you very much again.
I just wanted to say thank you to everyone. Sorry. I'm back. Thanks for, thank you everyone for coming and for these amazing contributions. I don't want to make Marion and Vanessa cry again, so I won't thank them again. Except just, the final thing I want to say is that this is just actually just, it's the beginning of the next step, which is putting together something of a manifesto. So we'll be in touch. We're going to have a little break over the summer, but we'll be in touch again with next steps and how to take this forward, because what's happened is that we've started a lot of really interesting conversations. And just very, very final thing is just a quick shout out to my four placement students who've been working very hard behind the scenes. I've never met them in I've only met one of them in person. I haven't met any of them in person. But I feel like I know them because we've been exchanging messages now for a few weeks. And yeah, just a huge thank you to you, because they've been working incredibly hard. And I pass over to Marion.
Merci Anna et merci à elle.
Thank you Anna, and thank you to her too. I'd like to add to what Vanessa was saying about voice. I've had this experience that you offered, thanks to your wonderful, the wonderful voices of David and Naomi, and not just your voice. This was already a collaborative experience, and I'd like to invite all the participants to send us bibliographical references to feed into our bibliography that we've started, and we'd really like this collaborative work to go on. So a big thank you to all of you.